This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When it comes to making decisions about whether to take a medication, undergo a medical procedure, or treat an illness, we are bombarded by information.
Waves of information about new studies.
And new drugs.
About their benefits, risks, and side effects. Lots and lots of information.
A study warns that the amount of added sugar you eat could be raising your risk of diabetes, heart
attack. Focused on cholesterol, believing normal cholesterol protected us from heart disease.
Say flu shots
are
safe. In this case, the FDA says they found nothing wrong with this particular batch, but sometimes there are complications.
Some fatal,
and that's apparently what happened.
Signs include abdominal pain and yellowing of the skin or eyes. Talk with your doctor about your medicines, including those for migraine, or if you
Well, you get the idea. We are drowning in information while starving for wisdom. That's how Drs. Jerome Groopman and Pamela Hartzman begin their latest book, Your Medical Mind, How to Decide What is Right for You.
Groopman is an oncologist. He's also a staff writer for The New Yorker and the author of four books, including How Doctors Think. Hartzman is an endocrinologist. Both are on the faculty of the Harvard Medical School and on staff at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center here in Boston. They're also married to each other, and they join us now in our studios. Jerome Groopman and Pamela Hartzman, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start this way. In the book, Your Medical Mind, you talk about the importance of understanding your own point of view when it comes to making medical decisions, and you divide people into various categories, two main categories, believers and doubters. Can you quickly define those two kinds of people?
So believers are people who believe that there is a good solution for their problem, and they just have to find it, and when they find it, they're just going to go for it. Mm. And doubters are the risk-averse people. They're thinking about the side effects, the downsides. Maybe the treatment's going to be worse than the disease.
So believers and doubters, and you refer as well to maximalists and minimalists. Jerome Groopman, what do you mean by that?
A maximalist is someone who wants to be proactive, ahead of the curve, do everything and more. Mm. A minimalist subscribes to less is more and wants to do the absolute minimum in order to deal with the problem.
And why is it important when we're navigating in the medical system to understand sort of where you are, who you are, where your tastes take you, essentially?
It's really important to know because that's your starting point. Let me give you an example.
Good.
I'm a minimalist and a doubter.
Mm-hmm.
So when I have a medical problem for my own health and somebody offers me a diagnostic test or a treatment, my immediate response is to think of all the things that can go wrong and say, no, I don't want that. So that's I have to acknowledge that about myself. I have to know that's my starting point. And then I have to educate myself and become informed, understand all the numbers, what applies to me, what doesn't, and integrate that back into my decision-making process. And then think, am I making the right decision by saying I don't want this? Maybe not. Maybe yes.
So if you know you're a doubter, then you have to sort of take extra pains to maybe educate yourself a little more deeply because you may be making decisions that are a result of your own bias, perhaps. Is that the idea?
I think that's true, that you can evaluate your decision better.
Mm.
Your first impulse may or may not be right.
Now, Jerome, we just heard Pamela say she's a doubter, a minimalist. You mentioned your own case in the book where you were diagnosed with high cholesterol. You opted for statins. You're more of the maximalist, the sort of do as much as you can.
Right. And these trace back very deeply to how we're raised, the experience of our family and so on. So I was raised as a believer that doctors are right, do everything possible. They're on a pedestal and do it to the maximum. But I had been tempered in this because I didn't have the kind of self-awareness that Pam talked about. So as a maximalist and a believer, very impulsively, when I had back pain, I rushed ahead to have a surgery, even though I didn't have a big blown disc or any clear indication, and ended up having a catastrophe. So when my cholesterol was high, with back aches, and knowing that muscle inflammation and muscle pain can be a side effect of statins, I was still a maximalist. So I maximally lost weight, exercised, didn't eat an egg for 6 months, right?
Yeah.
And my cholesterol didn't budge. And I realized I had to do something. But all of us are very influenced by stories. And I was in the parking lot of the hospital, and I saw a colleague, another doctor, who was hobbling to his car. He could hardly walk. And I thought, oh, my God, he must have a neurological disease. And it turned out he had taken a statin and developed severe muscle inflammation that had not gone away. So that made a deep impression on me. But as Pam said, I had to take that story and put it into the larger context of the numbers because it's extremely rare. And ultimately, as I say, I'm sort of a maximalist and a believer in recovery. So I took a low dose of statin.
You split the difference, it sounds like. You split the difference between the max, your maximalist biased and the minimalist.
Exactly. I try to be sane and in the middle.
Okay. And how has that worked out, if I may ask?
It's worked out very well. I haven't had any muscle ache, but I took a much lower dose than, you know, a 6'5", 200-pound guy usually would be given. And it's been terrific.
Well, listeners, we're talking to Jerome Groopman and Pamela Hartzband, two doctors, and all of this sort of gets down to how best to navigate this vast and confusing medical system. We want to get you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I want to read a very brief passage from your book, despite many, and this gets to the challenge of finding a doctor and deciding on a path to care. Despite many scientific advances, the unsettling reality is that much of the medicine still exists within a gray zone where there is no black or white answer about when to treat and how to treat. Often there are several differing approaches to treatment, each with its own risks and benefits. The best choice for an individual may be anything but simple or obvious. I find this this idea both encouraging, because I have some doubts and some skepticism about the sort of absolutist nature of some doctors, some in the medical community. I also am sort of troubled by it. You know what I mean? Do you want to, Pamela, let me start with you.
Well, I agree that can be disconcerting, but it can also be empowering to know that there's more than one choice.
Yeah. Disconcerting often, because it puts a lot of pressure on me. It's like, what do you mean? You don't know? There's gray area? I'm sick. I want to be told how to get better.
Yeah. And one of the things we thought a lot about in writing this book is, why do experts disagree? Why isn't there a right answer when several groups of experts have written up guidelines or recommendations on a particular subject, looking at the very same research information and numbers, and yet come up with different recommendations? Actually, the mammogram dispute is one of those. Maybe Jerry can speak to that.
But I think that what that shows is that the uncertainty is real. Mm-hmm. And as a patient, to truly be informed, and as Pam says, to be empowered, it doesn't mean that you're sort of thrown to the wolves, but to understand that there is no one right answer and that you work with your doctor to find the answer that's right for you. Mm. Because the flip side is to pretend, which is frequently done by experts, this is what's best. This is the default position. This is what you should be doing. And it may actually not be right for you in terms of your values, your aims, your goals as an individual.
So it sounds as though, I mean, you say it very clearly in the book, you're advocating a kind of medicine that is not a one size fits all. And this leads to this concept of best practices. And can you can we talk about that? And Pamela, let me start with you. What do we mean, first of all, very quickly, when we talk about best practices?
So best practices are guidelines or recommendations made by groups of experts who consider various scientific studies and try and come up with recommendations for groups of people. The problem with these is that they change over time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there was a study that showed that 15% of these are overturned after a year, something like 20% plus at 2 years, and after 5.5 years, almost half of them were overturned. So things are always changing.
And yet the best practices, Jerome Groopman, remain, and doctors in many cases feel compelled to be guided by them. They're part of the new health care plan, for example.
They are, and they're also mandated often by insurance companies. There are report cards on doctors and hospitals and so on. And certain of these guidelines, safety, don't get an infection, a surgeon doesn't leave a scalpel in your belly, or an emergency procedure or an emergency like a heart attack. But a lot of these have to, they encroach on patient choice. And they reflect the values and the subjective decisions of the experts. And they may not be the choices that you want to make for yourself. So they're presented as being scientific, objective, best. It's all of this use of language. But in fact, they're only best in the mind of the expert.
Can you give me a concrete example, Pamela?
Well, I just wanted to say that the experts have medical minds, too.
Right.
Some of them are maximalists, some of them are minimalists. So that that enters into their decision to suggest that something should be done or shouldn't be done.
Well, the mammogram, as Pam brought up before, is an excellent example. You have four expert groups with four different recommendations about mammograms for women between the ages of 40 and 50. And there was just a terrific piece in the New England Journal this past week, which looks at the information and, you know, everyone, as Pam said, is looking at the same numbers. But one group of experts says, yes, it is worth doing it in women between 40 and 50 because you save one life in 1900. And another group says, no, it's not worth it because it causes too much anxiety and distress and biopsies and so on for those women. That's a highly subjective decision and to some degree, frankly, paternalistic. Because even though they always have the leeway saying, oh, the woman can ask for it and so on, when you say this is best practice, the default position that's being presented to you as best is not to have a mammogram between 40 and 50. So there's real disagreement among experts in terms of best practices. And we think that this move to pay doctors to comply with best practices can pivot the doctor against the patient and pressure the patient to do something that the patient really doesn't want to do. And the doctor may not even think is good, but his salary depends on it.
Boy, that's extremely troubling. We're talking to Jerome Groopman and Pamela Hartzban. Their book is Your Medical Mind, How to Decide What is Right for You. Let's take a couple of calls. Let's go to Tina, who's calling from Acton. Hi, Tina.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a real fan of Jerome Groopman's writing and happy to hear that he's married and has a wonderful, smart wife that's on the phone with us today. I have an 80-year-old mother who has Parkinson's disease, also congenital heart failure, and making decisions about medication has been really challenging. Because she has Parkinson's, she has orthostatic hypertension and too much high blood pressure medication and too much Parkinson's medication cause high blood pressure. So I'm wondering if you could comment on that and if you have any experience with that.
Well, I think it's a very good point. What you're saying is that many people have multiple different medical problems, particularly among the elderly. And most of the information that exists in best practices or in research studies don't include people like your mother, because they're too complicated. They just want people who might just only have Parkinson's or people who only have orthostatic hypertension and so on. So that this is a place where you really need a physician who is thoughtful and customizes care to the individual to try to figure out what's best for her and to try to make sure that you don't do harm mixing drugs that potentially could have deleterious interactions.
Mm. Tina, thanks so much for the call. Pamela, early in the book, you and Jerome quote a physician from the last century, William Osler, who said, when trying to unravel a complex medical diagnosis, you should listen carefully to the patient because he is telling you the answer. As I was reading this book, it's full of advice for the medical consumer, the patient, but it also sounds like an entreaty to doctors to listen to the patient, right?
Definitely.
So what kind of a challenge does that represent?
Well, in terms of trying to figure out your medical mind, what we're trying to do in this book, we interviewed a lot of patients, and we interviewed patients with different types of medical problems in different parts of the country, different socioeconomic backgrounds, to try and really understand how patients are thinking about their problems. And that's really how we came up with these categories, or these kind of axes, if you will, spectrum of behaviors and thoughts that patients have.
So we learned from listening to the patient. We took the Osler injunction, which is to listen because the patient will give you symptoms or clues to his diagnosis. As Pam said, we sort of listened carefully to the patient because they gave us clues about what kinds of patients are out there, what kinds of medical minds. And then when we looked at ourselves and put ourselves under the microscope and asked, what's our medical mind? As a doctor and a patient, we actually learned from the patients. They gave us a direction and came up with this formulation, this framework in the book.
I have a very basic question, which I touched on earlier, and that is the best way to find a doctor, given what you've been talking about. Obviously, when you're looking for a doctor, you want to find a doctor who, I mean, well, here's my question. Do you want to find a doctor who shares your bias, whether you're a minimalist or a maximalist, or do you want to find a doctor who might challenge it and sort of provide some balance? Pamela.
So an interesting question. So I think you might think it would be better to have a doctor who thinks exactly like you do, and sometimes it is good or more comfortable to have that, but sometimes a doctor who challenges you can even give you more by bringing out some point of view that you hadn't really thought about. So we talk in the book about a doctor at our hospital who has three patients, all with very different approaches to their medical care, and he's able to understand and work with all of them. So I don't think your doctor has to have the same point of view as you do, but has to understand you and be able to listen and work with you.
I'm curious about you two, a minimalist and a maximalist, two doctors. You're married. You have children, I understand.
We do.
So does this, is there a tension in the household about prescribing care for your children, for example?
Let me say there's a discussion.
Well said.
We could use her at the UN this week.
But can you amplify on that just a little bit about that discussion? I mean, has it ever come up?
Well, I'm sort of a maximalist in recovery. So I think that one of the great things of marriage and marrying someone who you obviously deeply love and respect, but who thinks differently often than you do, is that, you know, she opens my eyes to things so that...
And it works both ways.
And it works both ways. But it there are times when we sort of disagree and so on. But I think with the kids, and this is sort of interesting, we were talking about this earlier today on the way over, that, you may get out of your own mindset as a minimalist.
I think that's true. We were thinking about an episode where our daughter had a fever and a cough, and it started out just like a regular viral type of illness, but then she got quite sick. And we brought her into the pediatrician. The regular pediatrician wasn't there, so a covering pediatrician who didn't know us was there. And she said, you know, I think this is a cold, and we'll give her some inhalers and kind of see how things go, and we'll take it step by step, and you can call us in a day or two if she's not getting better. And my attitude towards that was, no, she needs a chest x-ray. And
because you had a sense that there was something else going on there.
Exactly. Yeah. And I felt that she wasn't really listening to our individual situation. You know, she was more thinking about what the usual child who comes in with a virus has. And I felt that this was a different situation, that she had started that way but then gotten a very high fever and was much sicker. So I was pushing more the maximalist approach here. I wanted an x-ray and antibiotics if necessary, and it turned out she did have pneumonia.
And Jerome, you were okay with that?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, by the time she had an infection and pneumonia, I understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I certainly endorsed it. But I think, you know, the covering pediatrician was, you know, we wondered whether this person was also corresponding to the best practice guidelines, which says don't get an x-ray and so on, without trying to individualize.
The book is Your Medical Mind, How to Decide What is Right for You. Jerome Groopman, Pamela Hartzman, thank you so much for coming in. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Still ahead on the program, a brand new staging of Leonard Bernstein's operetta Candide. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Mm-hmm.